I have something of a reputation in my family and among my friends and among everyone who's ever met me of not being terribly observant at times. My parents were just here and we were having the conversation about all the things that I forgot when I was a child. And I was reminded of the story of the time that we went down to the shore. That's what you do if you grow up in Philadelphia. You go to the shore, which means New Jersey. The entire state is characterized as the shore. And my mother asked me to put the food in the trunk of the car, and I did, and we drove down to New Jersey, and she opened the trunk, and there was no food. And she said, "Did you put the food in the trunk?" And I said, "Yes." She said, "In this car?" I could tell you other stories, but you have better things to do, and besides, you have to save something for sermons to come. But I was reminded of this and this trait because I sometimes am as unobservant of myself as I am of others and the world. Because as you know, not so long ago, and I'm going to talk for a moment about the motivation, although not about the content, I finished a book about faith. And I thought I knew when I started to write that book. I read an editorial in the LA Times that attacked religion and attacked faith, and I thought, I've got to write a book not in defense of Judaism, because it's not about Judaism, but just in defense of religion and faith. And so I wrote this book, and the day I handed in the last pages, I said to my wife, "You know, the day I started this book was the day I read that editorial." And she smiled indulgently and said, "No, actually, the day you started talking about the book was the day you finished chemotherapy." And I thought about that a long time since, not about why I forgot, because that's just characteristic, but why it is that in reaction to an experience of cancer, and not the first, I thought, I got to write a book. And I realized that it was a different kind of faith, but a powerful kind of faith, and one that characterizes our tradition, and that is distinctive, not unique, but distinctive of what we have given the world. The historian Daniel Boorstin asks a very good question. You know, he doesn't ask it this way, but I'll ask it this way. Every week, I get a list of Jewish Nobel Prize winners. Right? You can stop sending me by email how many Jews have won the Nobel Prize. I know them all by heart. The physics, the chemistry, the literature. I believe a lot of Jews have won the Nobel Prize. Honest to God, I believe you. But Boorstin asks a related but different question. He says, why is it that technology and science triumphed in the West and not in the East? Because on that list of Nobel Prize winners, there are very few names from the East, from the Orient. The names are from Western Europe and a few Jews from Eastern Europe. Why is that? And Boorstin's answer is that even though the Greeks had some inkling of science, the reason it flourished in the West was because the Jews gave the world the idea of a creator God. And therefore, creation and creativity became precious. It was being like God to create something. And from that moment on, imbibed through the cultures of the monotheistic faiths, but taken from the Jews, was the idea that to create something is to be divine. And that faith, the faith in human creativity, that creating something is being holy, is not shared by everyone in the world. There are faiths that preach quiescence and acceptance and passivity, and see creation and activity as essentially destructive and dangerous. But that hasn't been the Jewish way. Now, creativity has dangers. We all know that. You can destroy as well as you can save. But still deep in our spiritual DNA is this belief that to create is to be godlike in the best way, not in the worst way. And I want to highlight three different forms of creativity that not only apply to our people as a whole, but also have something to say to this time of year. The first is purely building the world. When the Jews went to Israel, when the Chalutzim, the pioneers, built the land, they said, Anu banu arza, livnot ulehi banot ba. We have come to the land to build it and to be built by it. The idea being that there's something precious about throwing a bridge across a river, about tilling the ground, about creating a building in which people will learn. That is, to build something, to create a visible marker of human beings in the world, that's good. It's not a bad thing. And that idea, the idea that building is what God wants of us, that goes back to the very idea of creation. God said to us, now go. Fill, populate the world. Build cities and inhabit them. And we think of that as good. It has a downside. It has problems. But essentially, the physical creativity of human beings is a precious thing. And that's why when we look at the ancient creativity of human beings, when we see artifacts or ruins, it moves us so. When you find an ancient arrowhead, it touches something in us because we know that people before us crafted this and cared for it and built something in the world. Now, I grant you, by and large, Jews are not distinguished by their ability to build things. I may be exaggerating a little bit, but I remember the comedian David Brenner, who hails from my hometown of Philadelphia, saying when he grew up, his father would say to him, hammer bad, book good. As a result, he said, he grew up hammering in nails with a book. But this brings me to the second idea of creativity, which is the creativity of the imagination. We Jews have always wished to fill the world with stories, with music, with intangibles. When you open the Torah, you expect that you're going to hear words that tell you exactly how to live, and instead you get a story. Probably because of what the British author Philip Pullman knew when he said, "Thou shalt not touches the head, but once upon a time touches the heart." So when you open the book of Genesis, what do you get? You get, once upon a time, there was Abraham and Sarah. Once upon a time, there were brothers who fought. Once upon a time, there was a people who was sold into slavery. Once upon a time, fill the world with the creativity of your imagination. Because to chase the demons away, it is more powerful to tell stories about angels than to hide. You know the story in the Odyssey of Odysseus when he's going home and he goes by the sirens. The sirens are these sea magician witches who sing songs that seduce sailors away until they die. And Odysseus doesn't want to lose his life, so he ties himself to a mast and he puts plugs in his ears so that they will not seduce him away from his mission to go home. But Orpheus, who is the master of music in Greece, instead of tying himself to a mast, you know what he does when he passes by the sirens? He plays beautiful music so that his music will drown out their music. One of the ways that we chase the darkness away is by song, by story, by creativity. And that's why everywhere you look, in literature and in music, our people again and again and again distinguish themselves. It's an extraordinary thing. But we want to fill the world with stories because we know that to create, to tell people a story, to enchant them with what happened or with what might have happened, or with what never happened, but still can be told, is magic. You know the story that Wiesel tells so beautifully, the ancient Hasidic story about the rabbi who needs a miracle, so he goes to the forest and he lights a candle and he says a blessing and he gets the miracle. And then his disciple goes to the place in the forest and looks up at God and says, I no longer have the candle, it's burnt out, but I know the blessing and I know the place in the forest and I need a miracle, and he would get a miracle. When his disciple came along, he said, look, God, I no longer know the place in the forest, and I no longer have the candle, but I know the blessing, and that has to be enough, and it was enough. And then as the generations went on, everything was lost. And once he said, when the disciples of the disciples of the disciples needed a miracle, they would look up at the heavens and say, Ribono shel Olam, Master of the Universe, we no longer have the candle. We don't know the place in the forest, and we have forgotten the blessing for many, many generations, but I still know the story, and that has to be enough. And the story tells us that it was enough. The third creation is the creation of our souls. On Rosh Hashanah, we use the physical creation of the building, the words, the music, ultimately because we want to shape our souls. We are a people of active verbs. You look at the Shema, you shall walk, you shall do, you shall say. You shall shape your soul. People talk a great deal about finding themselves. And it's true, to some extent we find ourselves, but we also build ourselves. You're given a certain plot of land. You can't be anything in the world. You can't necessarily be an Olympic athlete or a concert violinist, but within the parameters of what you are, you can be many, many things depending on how you build. Each of us is given infinite possibilities. And creativity is choosing and building who you should be and who you can be. And that's not fixed. That's what tshuva is all about. Tshuva means both return and answer. And we answer ourselves by deciding who it is we wish to be and seeking day after day to shape it. I'll put it this way. I'll tell you a story. A few hundred years ago, there was a minor official who would be forgotten to history. His name was the Marquis of Brandenburg. And when he died, it was discovered among his papers that he received a package that he never opened. It was from someone who was known as a fine organist but had no reputation in his lifetime as a composer. His name was Bach. And inside of that package were what came to be called the Brandenburg Concertos. I think of that as a beautiful metaphor for the fact that each of us has inside of ourselves an unopened gift, something that we have yet to become, something that awaits our revealing it. A musical score written just for us, that if we are not careful, we could pass from this world without ever glimpsing and appreciating. It's all about creation. Hayom harat olam. On this day, we are told, the world was created, and every human soul, our rabbis tell us, is a world. Every human soul is a world. Nivra Adam yichidi lelamedcha kol hamekayem nefesh achad ki ilu kiyem olam male. God created the human being as a single person to teach you that anyone who saves a soul saves a world, because every human being is a world. So today is the day on which you can create a world. through what you build in the world, through the stories you tell, through the songs you sing, through the soul you shape. What a privilege and a joy it is to be given a world to create. God willing, on this year, we will build our worlds together, and they will be more beautiful and more blessed for our creativity and our creation. And the world we share, will be better for it as well. Shana Tovah.